Good?
Bad.
WTF. Well, I'm
thinking.
Welcome back to episode 72 of The Good, The Bad, and the WTF Where They Thinking. And on this very, 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 very summer's day, 29 degrees here in London. What is it in Ipswich? 26.
29, it's saying.
It says 26 on my watch.
On my laptop, they're saying 29.
Okay, well, we're going to agree with the laptop, which is clearly always going to be right.
Of course.
Tomorrow, when you listen to this, it's 38, and then Tuesday is 39. What the fuck?
Drink plenty of water.
What the fuck is going on? What have we done to the world?
I'm struggling. I mean, I don't even want to wear clothes at this point.
But please do, you know. I know that this is a listening-only podcast, but...
they don't know what I'm wearing.
And they shouldn't need to know either.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, it's been hard to think, hasn't it, in this weather. I don't really, other than the movie we watched this week, I haven't really explored too much cinema. What have I watched? Not a lot, if I'm being honest. Not a lot. What have you watched? Is that you?
I'm trying to think what I've seen. There isn't much, to be fair. I haven't seen much recently. Apart from the movie we've seen, it's been a bit too hot to stay inside and watch things. I've been outside trying to ventilate, or just sort of. I always get tired around this time, don't you? I feel like I need a nap now and then.
Yeah, I do, especially around this time. I mean, Peter's asked me to do this podcast at 3 p.m. on the hottest day of the week so far. The point where the sun is at its hottest too. So fuck him. That's what I'm saying. Fuck you.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, you wanted to... whose birthday is it today? You said it was someone's birthday off air. I've completely forgotten who you were talking about.
The heat has got to you.
Yeah.
It's Donald Sutherland's birthday.
Donald today. Trump's birthday. Okay, Donald Trump's birthday.
I don't think that... You should compare Sutherland to Trump.
It is That's his birthday.
Very harsh.
87 years old. And it
87
fits
years old.
It fits in perfectly as well, because we've gone back and watched Black Hawk Down, and this is a man who has been in many of other war movies. MASH, for example. A very big one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it's on trend.
I mean, he's still making stuff, and the first thing he made was in the 1962. And he's still making movies.
It's fair enough. That's very, very fair enough.
So he's always been a busy man.
It's funny when you have when you look back through their filmography of such a legendary actor, and you see like one of their first roles, and it's like Tall Man in Nightclub. It's just funny.
He is a tall man.
It's just funny.
He is a tall man, though.
It's just funny.
He is very tall.
He's just in the background of a movie in 1963. And now he is a household name. It's funny how things work out.
One of my favorite performances from him is in The Day of the Locust, where he plays Homer Simpson.
Yeah, Homer Simpson.
And it is one of the most uncomfortable tragedies to a man. I mean, he plays this shy, nice guy who just gets shat on for the whole movie, and then in the end he dies in the most horrific way, and it's just like, man, this, give this guy a break. That's one of the most tragic, in my opinion, one of the most tragic film characters, Homer Simpson.
And it's weird hearing Homer Simpson and not think of The Simpsons, isn't it?
It is.
I do actually often forget that there is another character called Homer Simpson. Was that what he was named after?
I doubt it. I doubt it. I think it's probably a coincidence, but two people that pretty much get shat on
in life. Homer Simpson and
great depths.
And Homer Simpson. Yeah. Yeah. He's had a lot of what was the most recent thing he's been in? He was in Ad Astra. I've not seen Ad Astra. He was in that, was he?
Oh, yeah, that's good, yeah. That's a good movie. It's a very small role, but I mean, the age he's at, small roles are probably better for him. You know, it's like just having a, you know, a nice, easy, something to do during retirement. I imagine he's retired and he's just pottering around.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
how it feels when you look at what he's doing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough, really, isn't it? It's just something to do when he, I suppose, gets a bit bored.
He was in Moonfall. That was a talked about movie that came out this year, Moonfall, for how bad it is, but he's in it. But I don't think he cares. I mean, he's getting the money. And he's like, you know, I've been in, like, how many credits has he got? Yeah, he's got 198.
It's a lot.
I mean, I would say probably 60, 70% are good movies, and then the rest are just...
do you reckon he's going to retire like, at 100?
Just give me the money.
At 200, sorry? Do you reckon he'll hit 200 and be like, that'll do?
I think there's some actors that just like to be busy, and I just think the day... I imagine Donald Sutherland's one of them, that he will stop when he can no longer do it.
When his body says, nah, we're done now.
Yeah,
he probably picks movies that are like nearby where he lives, you know, not too difficult to get to, not too many days on set, you know, can just turn up, do his bit and then go. Yeah, he probably does that. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. Does he have any kids? He has three sons.
Kiefer Sutherland. I mean, that's the,
of course,
that's the big one.
Of course, of course.
Who's obviously a fantastic actor.
Yeah, that is actually, I forget that is his son. Because he feels like he's been around for as long as Donald's been around. I mean, in terms of my life, I suppose he has. I'm 29 years old. So
1983, so yeah, that's the first thing he was in.
Fair play, really, fair play. Well, Kiefer was born in, he was born in London, wasn't he?
If you tell me so.
That's what it says. Born in Paddington, London, 1966. The year England won the World Cup.
I'm guessing that Donald was probably making a movie in England at that time.
Oh, I mean, it doesn't really...
Well,
doesn't
many
need to be where he
maybe.
Is. He didn't give birth to him. It, you know, it could be wherever Shirley was.
You would hope that he was to do with some part of the birth.
Yeah, you hope he was there, but... Can't guarantee it, can you? Anyway, we are rambling. I say we get straight into Black Hawk Down.
It's the heat.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it. This week's movie was a Netflix movie. Peter chose it.
It was on Netflix. Netflix didn't make the movie.
Yeah, but I like to say where the movie is, you know, because that's part of our shtick, isn't it? That we pick movies that are accessible for the audience to watch with us. So this was one that was on Netflix, but it's obviously not a Netflix movie. It came out in 2001, Black Hawk Down. And it was your choice, so take it away.
It was. Yeah, so this is the true story of about over 100 US soldiers who dropped into Somalia in the early 90s to capture two top lieutenants of a renegade warlord, and they find themselves in a desperate, very gruesome battle with heavily armed, I don't know what you call them, heavily armed
militia.
Are they soldiers? Militia is probably the word, yeah. This is a Ridley Scott movie. It has a kind of, I always find like these kind of big ensembles interesting because it kind of tells you who were like the peaking actors around this period and who were like the new actors and who were like the fresh actors. I always think like ensemble movies like this, especially war movies, you feel like you've got like these fresh new faces. And this is a movie where it is hard a lot of the time to distinguish the characters, but also I think it works more in its favor than against it. So, I mean, the cast, let's just run through a couple of names. You've got Josh Harnett, you've got Ewan McGregor, you've got Tom Sizemore, Eric Bana, you've got a very young Tom Hardy, and you've got a very young Orlando Bloom.
Yep. Yep. I mean, Tom Hardy, especially, is his first acting role, is it right? Yeah?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
it was, yeah.
His first one? Yeah, but yeah, for very, very young.
It's quite a significant role as well, isn't it? He is a part of the supporting cast, isn't he? He's not like a little brief performance. He's actually quite integral to partial of a part of the story. Same with Orlando Bloom. You know, his character is integral to the story. So these are young actors. Plays to now are like bigger than probably the actors they were acting with, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I like Josh Harnett, you don't see Josh Harnett in a lot of movies these days. Even same with Eric Bana. I can't remember the last Eric Bana movie I saw.
The last one I saw was, I mean, he wasn't a leading role, but the last one I saw was probably Funny People. He was in Funny People.
Mm-hmm.
It was good in that. Yeah, you're right. Don't see. I mean, Josh Harnett. We want to get into him a little bit later because I do want to talk more about him. But we'll obviously mm-hmm. kickstart with the movie. This is one. Do you know what? As I watched this is a movie which I actually just realised as I was watching it that I've never seen it before, and I've always felt like I had seen it. But as I was watching it, I was like, I haven't seen this movie. This is my first viewing of this movie.
I think I might be the same as you. I don't really remember anything from this movie. So if I had seen it before, it didn't retain anything. But I mean, watching it this time, I was thinking, one, I couldn't think of a more gruesome war movie than this. This really was gruesome.
Yeah.
This really, like, it you had body parts just coming apart, you blood splatter. I mean, this really was graphic. I felt like the other interesting thing about this is movies like this don't really get made anymore these days. I mean, this cost $90 million to make. The year before, Ridley Scott did Gladiator, which obviously won a load of Oscars, Best Picture, and was a big success. Obviously, he was more backed, but this is the kind of movie that I would like to see on a cinema because it's so loud and it's so immersive.
It won the Oscar for best sound that year as well, didn't it? So yeah, but probably this is one of those it's one of those re-releases that doesn't really get it. It doesn't, like, in London there's a lot of like open air cinemas and they do a lot of throwback movies in cinemas every now and then, and this movie, it doesn't seem to be one that if you were picking a war movie to re-show, this one wouldn't be selected. But it would be better in cinema.
Yeah,
I really
don't know the legacy of this movie. I don't hear anyone talk about this. When they talk about war movies, you get your usual Saving Private Ryan, Thin Red Line, Apocalypse Now. You don't really hear much about Black Hawk Down.
Mm. You don't. I think,
and this is an action movie.
I think I have a theory for that as well.
Okay.
Comparing it to a lot of war movies that are cult, not just cult, but classic status. Saving Private Ryan, Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket. They all have very, very memorable scenes. They always have at least one or two scenes in the movie that you put for that movie, and you never forget that it's from that movie. I think this is lacking a memorable scene. I think it's a good movie, but the one scene that could have been the most memorable one, where the helicopter's coming down, I feel like it wasn't best executed. I didn't like that the crash was cut away into the, like, was it the infrared vision was the way you saw the helicopter actually come down properly. I think that was a missed opportunity for that scene to be the one that you really resonate with this movie, especially because it was called Black Hawk Down. I think that's what it's missing. I think it was missing one particular scene that would go down in cinema history as one that you wouldn't forget. Because I was with war movies, there's always that. You look at 1917, the scene where he's running through the fields. They have that scene. They have that memorable scene that you're never going to forget. And this movie just, I don't think it has it. But it is non-stop action. This is 2.5 hours of, like, if you want to see a movie where you're like, oh, damn, I can't be arsed with all the boring bits of war movies. I just want to see pure action. This is the movie to watch, isn't it?
I mean, you have to get through the first 30 minutes. The first 30 minutes is like building up characters.
But
which I found interesting, but I also found it didn't need to be that necessary because, I mean, they build these characters, but as soon as you get into, like, the actual battles, the actual war, it's really hard to distinguish anyone anymore. Because
they've all got helmets on.
Everything's going on.
And they're all just flying about. Yeah, you're right. You don't really get a clear shot of anyone's face. You kind of lose track of who's dying. You're like, did Thingy just die?
Yeah. There's a lot of, and also because the how gruesome some of the deaths are, you're like, Jesus, you just like, you're looking at body parts just flying off the, I mean, you've got one guy who's only got a torso left.
Yeah.
Like his legs have been blown up and the other guy gets an RPG stuck in his stomach. I mean, I'd say that is a memorable scene.
That is pretty memorable.
I mean, I'd remember the RPG missile getting stuck in someone's stomach is pretty
gruesome. That's memorable,
but
it's not like cinematic memorable. Like, it's a memorable moment in the movie.
You probably couldn't play that clip. No, you probably couldn't play that clip.
That's what I mean.
It might be a bit too gruesome to...
Like a montage of great movies. There'd be a clip, you'd forget this movie.
I think it would be... I know what you're saying. Like, same point, Ryan, you got Normandy. The battle at Normandy, the start, is its big thing. However, this is kind of like, imagine if the Battle of Normandy was all of Saving Private Ryan. This is what it is. It's like, it is a memorable scene, but it's the whole movie is one scene. That's what it is, really.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, you are watching it and you're like, bloody hell, when's this going to kind of tail off into another scene? You do feel like you're watching the same scene for a very long time, which makes it very enjoyable. I think the last hour of the movie was really good. The intro sets the movie up perfectly, I think, with the text on screen and like the various shots of I don't really want to go into graphic detail, but burnt bodies basically. It sets up the movie really, really well into what you're walking into. And it's obviously an interesting story. I haven't really seen too many. I may be wrong, but I don't know if there's any more movies of this, like level of cinema that kind of tackles this particular war, or you know, Americans being involved in this civil war. I can't think of too many movies that really tackle it.
I think partially the other thing it might have against it is it does feel dated.
Yeah.
Like, it does feel like one-sided. It does feel like the Americans are the good guys and the other guys are, like, just evil and just want to kill all Americans.
Yeah, you're right there.
I think, like, if it was made today, it might be a little bit more leveled, so we might see more of the Somalia side. Mm. I think there's partially that it does feel like, to quote the Team America song, America, fuck yeah. It's kind of a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But there are little moments where we do hear from that side and they do ask him the question, if you think you capture him, you think that's the end of the war sort of thing. Like, the Americans just feel like, we have to just take down one guy and it's all over. You know what I mean? Like, and they're kind of like, you know, it's not that simple. You know, you're walking into something that isn't your battle sort of thing. So there is that, I guess, but the overall depiction is that they are the baddies and the Americans are the goodies. Yeah. Which isn't true in real life.
No, considering that America is quite a rich country and Somalia isn't. It's really interesting how this movie tries to make America the underdogs. They always seem to, America's always got to be the underdogs in the movie. And it's kind of a little bit strange sometimes, especially when you think of the dynamic, right?
Yeah,
there.
You think of the you think of the difference in size of armies and stuff like that as well. Yeah, it doesn't. It's not that simple. But they took down a helicopter. And that's it. They're bad now. They took the helicopter down and they took down one of our hawks. We're not risking another hawk while we're out there. That's basically the movie.
But they did. They kind of risked.
They
a
risked
few
a few in the end.
Hawks. This is also a little bit interesting trivia for this is George W. Bush's favorite
there
movie.
There you go. One of his That's another reason movies. Why it's probably lost all of its respect. Ridley Scott was probably like, fuck.
I can imagine him sitting down and enjoying this movie.
It's not good that he enjoyed this movie, is it? That shows they didn't do their job, because he would definitely be on the side of the Americans. So, damn you, Ridley Scott. You fucked it. You fucked up here. But it is a good cinema watch, but it's also a true story. So there are elements of like difficult to watch parts as well when you actually realize that it's kind of real.
Yeah, I suppose that's why I haven't obviously done much research in Ridley Scott's making of this movie, but I imagine that's the whole point of it being kind of a bit of a non-stop action movie, is to put you in the perspective of the soldiers. Mm. Because this is what they're faced with. They're stuck in a war zone, and you know they're on foreign soil. And they do not know what they're leaping in towards. So there's a lot of that. I can imagine it's very stressful. You can't really relax, can you? You've got people shooting left, right, and centre.
Can't relax watching this movie, to be honest.
You can't really, no.
There's a lot going on.
It's one of the movies that don't eat popcorn to it, because you won't be eating. Your mouth will be constantly open just watching everything, and it's not a popcorn movie.
Mm. This was I didn't realize it was Eric Bana's US film debut.
Russell Crowe recommended it, because Russell Crowe was originally offered that role, which he turned down because he was doing A Beautiful Mind. And he recommended Eric Bana because he's a fan.
That's interesting.
Which, to be honest, I think works, because I think Russell Crowe in this movie stands out a bit too much. And I think what the movie is at the moment with the actors it has, they're all, I wouldn't say unknown actors, but they're not big actors, you know. And I think Russell Crowe was, at that point, he was an A-lister. I mean, the biggest, closest actor they got to an A-lister in that is Ewan McGregor, and I think probably early 2000s. I mean, he could have been, but I think he still probably wasn't as big as he is probably now.
True. Well, it's weird to think, with Eric Bana, would he have recommended him from the movie Chopper?
Yeah, I think it was Chopper. I think that was the movie.
Which, if you look at it, it doesn't feel like that's an Eric Bana movie, does it?
I've got to see it again.
I've never seen it, but like you look at that and you go, because I always remember seeing that exact film cover in like Blockbuster or something, and always being intrigued by it, because it's Chopper. It sounds quite interesting. Didn't know it was Eric Bana.
It's a bit like Bronson. It's a bit like Bronson.
Yeah, the Australian Bronson. But he went from that, and then he went into, I mean, he went very fucking mainstream after Chopper, didn't he? Into Black Hawk Down. He went very mainstream.
Oh, he did the Hulk, didn't he? He did
not long after as well.
Troy. And then kind of like sort of slipped away after Munich. Like, he was doing all these like really like well known sort of movies, and then he kind of just slipped into like, I suppose the problem is there's always new actors or actors on the radar, and it always fluctuates, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems to have gone a little bit back into a few Australian films again, doesn't it? It seems to have, like, in recent years, it's doing a lot more Australian stuff. But there is an actor,
I mean, even like Tom Sizemore. I mean, he's like completely slipped away. I know he had a drug problem, but I mean, around this time, Tom Sizemore put a war movie, like, sign him up. Like, Saving Private Ryan, Black Hawk Down, that was his sort of ticket there. He knew a good war movie.
Yeah, he did. He did know a good war movie. You're right, he's kind of, yeah. He did quite a few, didn't he? He did a lot, actually. Another actor that's interesting from this cast, and I mean, kind of the face of the movie as well, Josh Harnett. Mm-hmm. At this time, huge sort of actor doing this sort of movie. I mean, he was big in The Faculty. That was a big movie for him. He did Pearl Harbor as well, went into that.
Yep, same year as well. Same year,
very big year for him. And then he's another one who's sort of like his career has sort of dwindled off. So you look at, obviously, 2008, he did a movie called August, which I've never seen, but it's got a lot of critical acclaim to it. And then after that, it's kind of no real big movies, no big hitters. And it's kind of a weird one. I don't know why. I'd be interested to find out why he didn't become like a proper household name, considering.
I think probably there was a couple of duds there. I mean, Pearl Harbor obviously was a massive flop. It was a bit of a slop. Hollywood Homicide was another flop. The Black Dahlia was another flop. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of him until I saw 30 Days of Night, and I thought he was really good. And then he did the TV show, which got cancelled early on, but I really liked it, and I thought he was good in it. Penny Dreadful. I thought he was great in that. And I think, I mean, he's in Christopher Nolan's new movie that comes out next year, Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. So who knows, that might be a bit of a push. But I think it's more he's just picking the movies that he can. You know, I think he's not got the name. I don't really know. It's kind of like around that period, you got to think some actors, they just struggle because there's so many other actors that are kind of similar to him.
I feel like if he would have been big like now, if he would have done a movie like Black Hawk Down like 2 or 3 years ago, he'd be in a Marvel movie, wouldn't he?
I think, yeah, he'd definitely get the superhero call.
Absolutely.
He could be a good Doctor Strange.
Yeah, he could be. He could be a good Doctor Strange. He's had just an interesting career. I was kind of surprised to see him in this because I forgot that he was a leading man at one point. But yeah, he's always good in movies I've seen him in. I've never thought he wasn't bad. 30 Days and 30 Nights was probably the first thing I ever... 30 Days of Night, sorry. Was it 30 Days of Night? No. 30 Days and 30 Nights. 40 Days and 40 Nights. Yeah. Fucking hell, I'm all over the shop.
We got there eventually.
We got there eventually. That was the first one I...
There's days, nights, and the number is somewhere.
That was the first one I saw him in. And that was a good movie. That was a very good movie. It's just had an interesting career.
I think it's an interesting career, and who knows, it might pop up again. But I mean, there's a few actors here that their careers are quite interesting, aren't they? I mean, Ewan McGregor, he seems to be hot and cold throughout his career. Tom Sizemore, Eric Banner, as we talked about. Obviously, you've got Jeremy Piven, which is a strange one, isn't it? Really, Jeremy Piven to be in this movie?
Yeah, that's random.
Tom Hardy, who kind of really kind of like shot up after Inception, but he did bank of movies long before then, which sort of a lot of war movies as well. I mean, he was even in Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
So it is kind of strange. And then obviously Inception happened, and probably Bronson, and then Inception happened, and that really propelled him. Orlando Bloom.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a point he was in the Lord of the Rings movies, he was in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I can't remember the last thing I saw him in.
No, that's a good point. And he is a proper name, isn't he? Like you always, he feels like he's always around, even though he's not as much.
Yeah, it's kind of like Rupert Grint.
Yeah, you don't forget.
You know who Rupert Grint is, but you can't remember the last Rupert Grint thing you've seen.
Yeah, you can't. No, you can't. Actually, I'm looking for his thing now. Not Rupert Grint, obviously. Orlando. The last thing he actually did was... What the hell is this? Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell Tales. Tell No Tales. Is that the last movie they did? 2017. He only had a cameo in that movie.
I think so, yeah. I remember there was that Amazon thing, Carnival Row. I always remember the trailers for that. But I've never seen it. But that's the last thing I officially know he was doing. And the other thing I know is that he's married to Katy Perry. And that's about it. I think I more know he's married to Katy Perry than anything else.
I didn't know he was married to Katy Perry.
Or is he dating Katy? He's married to Katy Perry.
He's absolutely married to her. Jason Isaacs is in this movie as well. Another interesting one.
Always like a good character actor to see in a movie. Ewan Bremmer as well, who goes deaf halfway through.
Yeah, he's an interesting one as well, actually. He felt kind of random, actually. Ewan Bremmer. He felt very random. He was also in Pearl Harbor. Same year.
There's a lot of crossovers, there is isn't
a lot
there?
A lot of crossovers you wouldn't Pearl Harbor expect. And... Josh Hartnett and Ewan Bremmer. Got mixed up there.
And then you got Ewan McGregor and Ewan Bremmer, who are in Trainspotting together.
Yeah, of course. Spud. That's his role he will always be remembered for. He's another actor. Like, I don't know how many big Hollywood movies he actually did. I feel like these are the only two, aren't they? Black Hawk Down, Pearl Harbor. Has he done any other big ones? Alien vs. Predator?
Who's?
Ewan Bremmer.
Who's it? Ewan Bremmer.
He was in Alien vs. Predator, Around the World in 80 Days. He did a few, actually. He did more than I thought.
He was pretty... I mean, Wonder Woman. He was in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
That's a big movie.
He was in Wonder Woman,
Exodus, Gods and Kings. So he worked with Ridley Scott a few times.
Yeah, he has. Ridley Scott and him get along quite well.
And he was also in My Name as well, where he played...
Was he?
A dog man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was. I remember that now. Legend. Scottish actor. Legend.
I must have missed him, but even Ty Burrell was in this movie.
He was, yeah. I think he was a small role as well. He was a pretty small role. He was in this movie, yeah.
There's just so many here, but I mean, to get off like the actors a little bit, I want to talk about the filmmaking, because I do think this is a movie which is more class for its filmmaking than its acting, because this is a big flashy artistry thing. And we talk about the sound. Obviously, it's got a great sound to it. It's very loud. It's very mixed well. So even the loud moments, you can still hear the dialogue. Mm-hmm. So there's good mixing. The editing for me was a bit hit or miss. I mean, you talked about the Black Hawk going down and how that was edited. And I felt sometimes it works when the editing's fast to confuse you, but sometimes it confused me so much I wasn't sure who died or what happened. I thought that sometimes it could be a bit too choppy for me.
Yeah, it was hard to keep track of that. I definitely agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The cinematography.
Cinematography was good. There was moments where it felt very 2000s. I think one where Josh Hartnett was running in slow motion. The slow-mo wasn't great.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of... The same when Orlando Bloom falls out of the helicopter and it kind of slow-mos into that sort of dodgy-looking CGI. Yeah. I wasn't too much of a fan
of that. Noticed it, but I suppose at the time it probably looked quite good, but... Yeah, when you
it probably looked very cool.
When you watch it back, you're like,
But you got to remember, this was during the time where The Matrix came out and did slow-mo and everybody wanted to be The Matrix.
Yeah, true. This movie had quite a big... I mean, this movie was released 28th of December in 2001. So it had that proper... A lot of people go to the cinema over that period, over Christmas, don't they? So they put a lot of hope in this movie being a big hit. And to be fair, it probably was a big hit.
I think it grossed over 100 million.
Yeah, it was a big hit for that. I mean, you know what you're going to get with Ridley Scott. I think Ridley Scott is a sort of... He's a very cinema director, isn't he? In the sense that, it's worth maybe going to the cinema to watch his movies. Because even if you don't like the movie, it's probably the best experience you're going to get watching his movie.
This is the point where he's been working since... the early 70s, and so he's just like he's just like, right, this is the next movie, right? Let's make it up. Let's see what we can do with it. Again, he was nominated for Best Director in this.
Yeah.
You could see why. You could see a lot, like I said, you could see a lot of the director's work here. It's a very, I wouldn't say showy, but it's a very noticeable director's work.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I give you that. What else was it nominated for? So obviously won Best Sound. What else did it get nominated for? Best Cinematography was nominated for as well for any Academy Awards.
Yep.
Deservedly so, maybe. But it won editing and best sound in the Academy. So it did well in that sense. It's not a bad movie. There's just something forgettable about it. And I can't, other than it's maybe the, obviously, as I said earlier, with this not having a big memorable scene, other than that, I can't put my finger on it.
I think it's, I suppose it's more how you feel. Like going into it, do you want to watch like a big action movie and just like if you're a fan of Call of Duty, I can imagine this kind of movie would be right up your alley. You just sit down, you just watch some action, and it doesn't really matter if you follow along as long as you're engrossed into it. So, but I think it depends what kind of movie you're looking for. This isn't a pull at your heartstrings kind of movie. This is a buckle in and we're going to give you an experience here. This is a welcome to what it'd be like to be in a war zone kind of movie.
Yeah.
Almost like a bit of like a documentary. But there's a bit of documentary feel about it.
Yeah, it kind of drops you right in the heart of the battle, doesn't it? And you kind of along for the journey.
It doesn't like escape its cliches, because you still have the cliches where you've got someone who's about to die, who's sort of given the like final death speech before they die. So it doesn't escape its cliches, but
yeah,
I didn't mind so much the cliches because it was like a little bit of a breather from like all this action. It was kind of nice to go, oh, all right, we just like compose ourselves for the next bit. It's like checkpoint.
One of my favorite cliches is always when a character is on death's door, they it feels like they're not going to make it. Everyone in the room feels like they're not going to make it. They know they're not going to make it. And they turn to someone and they say, tell my mama I love her. And then they always turn around and say, I'm not going to tell her. You're going to tell her yourself. And I always feel like that is a death sentence and
then,
straight away.
Then they die then 20 they seconds die. Later.
They always die when someone says, no, man, don't say that. You're going to tell him yourself. You're going to make it. Then they die. Yeah, it is.
I like when they say, I feel that I'm going to die. I feel I'm dying. And they're like, no, man, you're going to survive.
You're hanging there, man.
You're going to survive. We're going to go to the Blue Lagoon. We're going to fish some salmon and drink beers, man. And we're gonna reminisce about these days, man. Me and you. You're going to be there with me at the Blue Lagoon.
That's exactly what they do. They don't just do it in war movies. They do it in space movies. Because whenever people are just going to die in like an environment where they, you know, they're away from home, they're the movies where it seems to happen the most in. Yeah, it's always that one, isn't it? Where they go, you're gonna be there. They start saying things that they love doing. He mentions fishing at the beginning of the movie, and then they're like, hey, we'll bring that back up later when he's fucking dying. Man, you're gonna go fishing.
What kind of hat is that? Oh, I wore that fishing. That's my fishing hat. That's my grandpa's fishing hat.
My grandpa's lucky fishing hat. Fishing. Yeah, it's my grandpa's lucky fishing hat. I take it everywhere with me, man. And later on,
he said, I'm going to die. So no, you ain't. You're going to give your grandson, your grandpa, his fishing hat. You're going to be sitting by the Blue Lagoon with your grandson and some buds. And you're going to be fine, man. You're going to reminisce about this day. It's going to be beautiful. Don't you know? Oh, he's dead.
Oh, he died. And then the guy who was talking to him takes his fishing hat and he's wearing it at the end of the movie just to rub extra salt in the wounds. That is a typical.
Well, he leaves it there.
That is a typical. Yeah, no, he wouldn't leave it there. He wouldn't lose his lucky hat.
Maybe
it's now my lucky hat, yeah.
It's not lucky. It's not lucky. He's dead.
Can only take you so far. That's a proper cliche from a war movie, isn't it? War movies and space movies have a lot in common, which I suppose is Ridley Scott's thing as well, isn't it? Loves a war movie, loves a space movie. Yeah. Space war.
He does dabble there.
Anywhere he can.
He does dabble on the sci-fi.
Big explosion, see. Anything that can explode, he'll be there.
I can imagine that this is right up his alley. If I was a director, this is the kind of movie I'd like to make, because basically you're kind of making a visual performance here. And obviously Ridley Scott started off making adverts. He was very successful doing that before he even went into making movies. He made loads of adverts in the 70s, made a lot of money from that, was very successful. So in that regard, something like Black Hawk Down, where you just it's just visuals on display, must be a lot more interesting for a director than a acting piece. You know, that the actor piece is good for the actor. The actor wants the acting piece, but the director wants the visual.
Oh yeah. I wonder. I haven't really listened to many interviews with him. I know he did like one of the round tables, didn't he? I need to go back and watch some of those. I watched them ages ago when all the directors are sitting around the round table. I'm pretty sure he was on one of those. I feel like he's just the sort of guy who just like goes. I don't think he looks into it too deeply outside of cinema. It's like, what do you want to really look at when you make a movie? Like, what's the one thing? Bro, just like, chaos.
I like that he is like, I remember when Scorsese came out and talked about like Marvel and it not being true cinema, and everyone got a bit upset about that. And then Ridley Scott came out and said, shit. You know, Ridley Scott came out and said it was even worse. It's just shit. But funny enough,
I love that.
I watched a YouTube video the other day of Russell Crowe, and he was on the Howard Stern show, and he was talking about Gladiator. And he was talking about his experiences of working with Ridley Scott. And he said there was this one scene where he said, I want you to do this, that like, and just sort of gaze around like you're looking at this robin, and this robin's going to, like, it's perched on a branch and then it's just going to fly away. So he does the scene, and he does everything that Ridley Scott says. And after the scene's cut, Ridley goes up to him and says, me and you are going to be okay. So that's kind of like, Ridley is kind of like, as long as you do what Ridley wants to do, you're fine. And he said many times, I mean, the Gladiator movie, for example, apparently the script was shit. And only about like 20 pages of that script they used. So like him and Ridley would sit there and they would try and like get these 20 pages to be a good movie and try and add in, fill in. And I you never really think about it. Fincher obviously does that as well. Mm. But obviously Ridley doesn't write his own movies. He's always directing someone else's work. So he's always editing them to feel like a Ridley movie. And they always do. And obviously Ridley is one of the greatest film directors. I think he's up there. He might not get the credit that, say, Tarantino or Kubrick might get, because I think his movies sometimes, they can be really bad. I mean, he has made some really bad movies, but he is consistent. And I kind of like when he makes a misstep, because that's the one thing you haven't got like with Tarantino. Tarantino hasn't got many missteps that you can't judge how he's going to react from his misstep. Mm. Whereas Ridley, he's got so many missteps that they don't work, but then suddenly he'll pull out a diamond in the rough and he'll make a movie that's great, and then sometimes he won't. And I find that interesting. I find that more of an interest in filmography than someone that's just great, 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 great.
He is pretty great, 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 isn't he, at the same time? But it's mad that he's never won an Oscar as well. It's kind of crazy.
It is a bit strange. I mean, obviously Gladiator was his best shot and that never happened. I think it's probably too late. I can't. I mean, he's got a movie in the works. I don't know if it's coming out this year or the year after. He's doing a movie about Napoleon with Joaquin Phoenix playing Napoleon. Mm. Maybe, but I don't know. I just feel like I can't see Ridley winning an Oscar.
Yeah, it's mad to think he didn't actually win the Gladiator year, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, considering that it was the best picture, that he didn't win the best director. That was his best shot, I would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah, he was unlucky there. He was definitely unlucky there. I mean, he got nominated for Black Hawk. I mean, the only ones who've been nominated for Black Hawk Down, Gladiator, and Thelma and Louise. And obviously, Best Picture, The Martian got nominated, but...
Yeah, he wasn't even nominated for The Martian. No, he wasn't. For director.
Maybe there is a bit of favouritism, and maybe he's not quite liked by the Academy in that sense. It's hard to know.
Yeah, maybe. He comes across as outspoken, someone who speaks his mind. Yeah. Whenever I've heard him speak, even when he won his Golden Globe for The Martian, for Best Comedy, he went up there and went, Best Comedy Musical? You know, he knew it was bullshit. He knew that The Martian shouldn't have been placed in Best Comedy, and so he legitimized it. But I can also imagine, I don't think Ridley Scott really cares.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't think that's going to define his career in Oscar. I think there's some directors or artists, let's say, there's some artists that I don't think they need to win awards necessarily to be good. They're good without them. It's more like the Oscars need to validate themselves by giving Ridley an Oscar than Ridley needs to validate himself by receiving one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, House of Gucci was another one.
I really liked.
Was another one.
I really liked. It's a movie that I think is divisive. I think there's a lot of Ridley Scott movies that you could probably say that about.
Yeah. But that's the one where you'd maybe he... I think that proves that maybe it isn't over for him being nominated for an Oscar. Because House of Gucci was... very well received and was up there within one of the best movies of that year. And it had a...
Yeah, same with The Last Duel, which was quite underrated, I thought.
Yeah, so it's not over yet, I don't think. I don't think it's over yet. Really still... There's still gas in the tank, you know? There's still gas in the tank for Ridley to win an Oscar. And he'll probably win... I don't know if he has won a Thingy Award. Has he won a... What would they call it? And just give someone is it Lifetime Achievement Award at the Oscars? Do they do that?
Oh, yeah, like a Governor's Award or an Honorary Award.
Yeah, he probably hasn't won that yet either, has he? But
he hasn't. He's won a BAFTA Fellowship, though. He did win that, didn't he?
He's probably more appreciated by the British film industry than he is the American, by the sounds of it.
Well, I don't know. He's not won anything else apart from that.
Has he not won a...
He doesn't... When you look at his career, he hasn't won a lot of things.
It's kind of mad, isn't it?
He's been nominated, but he hasn't won a lot of things.
Because when you look at his...
It is a bit strange.
When you look at the movies he's made, you're like, fucking hell, they're big movies. They're big hitters. All of them are big hitters, really. Oh, well. Alien. Very underrated in that sense, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and maybe we should jump onto our next
segment. We should, because we're getting in very Ridley Scott heavy here.
Yeah, well, we are, so it makes sense.
All right, we'll dive into our top five. So the top five this week is Peter's selection, of course.
Yep. Top five Ridley Scott movies I went for.
Simple.
Now, at some point, we're going to do a top five, a Ridley Scott ranking list. So we will rank all of them at some point. But I thought, I couldn't think where to really do anything with Black Hawk Down, like top five war movies or top five Ridley Scott movies. And I just thought maybe it's because I heard the Russell Crowe thing. I had Ridley Scott on my mind a little bit more, and I thought this would be interesting to talk more about him, because obviously he's been around for so long. He's still making movies, and he makes two movies a year, doesn't he? He turns over a lot of movies.
It doesn't relax.
He's constantly producing things. He's constantly directing things. I mean, if you look at his IMDb, the amount of things in post-production that he's producing is incredible, and the amount of things in post-production that he's directing is quite incredible. So he doesn't seem... A lot like Donald Sutherland, I can imagine that Ridley Scott will stop when he can't do it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you want to kick us off or shall I kick us off?
I will kick off, I think. And I'll go my number five, which is a divisive Ridley Scott movie, Prometheus.
And that is my number five as well.
Well, there we go. So, I mean, let's talk about this movie because a lot of people don't like Prometheus because they wanted it to be different, you know, to be more like Alien. Mm. And I love this movie because it's nothing like Alien.
I'm in the same boat as you. I didn't want an alien from this movie. I don't know why people would. But it is completely different. This was a movie that when it came out in, God, it feels like 2012. Yeah, I feel so long. That's 10 years ago now. That's absolutely mental, yeah. Isn't it? When this came out, this was one of those movies that it was kind of like everyone was telling me to watch it. You have to watch this movie. Everyone who saw the movie was immediately like, you have to watch this movie. So you have to watch it. And it doesn't disappoint. It is a blockbuster movie, isn't it? And Fassbender, at this time, Fassbender was probably at the top of his game, I'd say. 2012 was a big year for Fassbender. So, yeah, it was.
And what performance?
Yeah, really good performance.
And you got some really good actors there. What I like about it is it's that kind of survival movie stuck on a desolate planet, and we're not really sure what is there or what's this or what the engineers are, and it's quite vague. And the only unfortunate thing is that Alien Covenant decided to be more like Alien and less like Prometheus, and I thought that was disappointing. I kind of feel like Prometheus never got its great ending that it was built to have, and we just got a movie that was more like Alien, which I thought was a shame because I really like what they did with this movie. Even like weird things like Guy Pearce is playing like an 8-year-old man covered in makeup and you're thinking why, and there's obviously deleted scenes where Guy Pearce is younger. So I just feel like Prometheus, there's this interesting thing, maybe it's the same with Blade Runner, where eventually we might see a Prometheus director's cut where he might piece it together. But I always feel that, especially with Ridley Scott sci-fi, they have to be diversive and build up a cult following, and suddenly you'll get a director's cut and then it will be hailed as a masterpiece of the future. And I think Prometheus will. I think Prometheus is going to be a movie that people will probably come back to. It's one I always think about.
Do you think it's got the same sort of impact as Inception? Like, I feel like Inception at the time when it came out was huge. Everyone went crazy for it. And you go back and watch it, like I did in the cinema about a year and a half ago, and it's the same impact as watching it for the first time. Like, it has aged brilliantly.
Do you know what? I've always thought this. I think it's probably Nolan's best movie.
Yeah?
Inception. I think it is. I go back and watch The Dark Knight, and sometimes I really like it, and sometimes I think, like, but with Inception, I always feel the same way. Mm. I don't think it's ever changed from the first time I saw it to now. Maybe the only difference is the gasp at the end. I don't gasp anymore, but that was the only...
You did the first five times you watched it, you were still gasping.
I'm a bit like Uncle Albert.
Yeah, for me, I compare it to that in terms of... I think it will age well. The fact that it came out in 2012, which is 10 years ago, doesn't feel like 10 years ago at all. So, yeah, I think that's another one that will age nicely.
And it's got a nice big cast of actors. You know, you got Idris Elba there, Benedict Wong,
Charlize Theron,
Logan Marshall Green, Charlize Theron, Noomi Rapace, and obviously Michael Fassbender. Mm. And they're all kind of... early, this is, apart from Charlize Theron, they're all quite early in their careers. So, you know, there's this kind of freshness to it. You know, they're not big superstars yet. Idris Elba is not the big superstar that he is now. Same with Fassbender. And so there's kind of like an intrigue about this movie for that.
Well, Fassbender's racing cars now, isn't he? That seems to be what he loves to do most. at the moment. He does a lot of auto racing.
Whatever makes him happy.
No, like legitimately, like competitively. He has the name of a Formula One driver, doesn't he? Michael Fassbender?
Yeah.
Isn't that the most Formula One driver you've ever heard in your life?
It does sound more like a racer than an actor, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of racing. So it's kind of cool. He's just kind of, I love it when actors get to that stage where they're like, fuck it, I'm going to start racing. I'm like, their agent goes, we've had a few scripts come through. Do you want to have a look at one from Ridley Scott's got in contact. He's going to use a new script. Nah, I'm gonna start racing. And they're like, okay, what do I do? I don't know, just answer my emails. Okay.
It's a nice little hobby, isn't it?
The agent's just like, what do I do while you're doing that? Yeah, Fassbender. So I respect that. I do respect that. I was just reading through his personal life as well. Lived in Hackney lived in Hackney from 1996 until 2017, and then he just moved to Portugal, and now they live in Lisbon, and he races. Love it. Why the fuck not? Number four.
Do what you do. Do what makes you happy.
Number four.
Number four for me is Gladiator.
I put this higher up in mine, so we'll talk about this. This is my number two. I imagine there's going to be a lot of crossovers because, you know, his best movies are his best movies. Why is this not higher for you? This was the first DVD you ever owned.
The reason is there's just three movies that I think are better than this.
Okay.
As simple as that. I do really like this movie. I think it's it was my introduction to probably like Roman fighting. It's quite a standard story when you think about it, isn't it? It's, you know, a man gets a slave, turns into a gladiator, then defies the emperor.
What a great movie. This is a proper Sunday afternoon movie, isn't it? Isn't this like a perfect Sunday afternoon movie?
Do you know what's great about this movie? The more I watch it, how great Joaquin Phoenix is. And this might be my favorite Joaquin performance because he's so slivery in this movie. You hate him. There's nothing likable about that character.
Yeah, he plays it.
You can't wait for that character to die.
It's true. He plays it perfectly. Joaquin, he's got that sort of face, hasn't he? He's got an evil face.
He does. He suits this role perfectly. He really does. And Russell Crowe, this is where Russell Crowe starts to become the big actor. Gorgeously shot. I mean, the action, again, it's a very gruesome movie. A lot of the gladiator fights are very gruesome.
It's a brilliant movie.
You've got,
it's a brilliant movie.
It's a brilliant movie. It's a brilliant movie. It looks authentic. It's got the great score from Hans Zimmer, which always stands out for me. The old humming. And they're making a sequel as well.
I can't believe that. They've been talking about it for a very long time, haven't they? It's been floating around for a long time. Is it actually a bit more legit now?
I don't know. It always sounds a bit supernatural, like fantasy.
Yeah.
Like he's in the afterlife. And I think, for me, like Gladiator was pretty stripped down to realism, and so to see something that's completely different for that is kind of a bit, makes my head scratch.
So it's toyed as his next film after Napoleon that he's gonna go and start working on Gladiator 2.
This time it's personal.
Maximum strength or whatever, maximum death.
It's basically like the jokes when they made The Passion of the Christ 2, which now, funny enough, they're making The Passion of the Christ 2.
Yeah. Which is stupid. But Gladiator is, the name of the movie is perfect. Gladiator.
I reckon they'll make a Titanic 2 eventually.
No, they can't do that.
It rose.
The rise of Titanic.
Titanic lives.
Is Russell Crowe going to be in it?
I have no idea. I can't imagine. Russell Crowe doesn't really look... One, I mean, his character died, so he can't be older than he is.
Well, if it's a prequel.
If you're dead.
If it's a.
Well, then he definitely can't be in it because he's even older. He died, so if it's a prequel, that was like. That movie was 22 years ago.
True. Yeah, you're
Russell
right.
Russell Crowe has now got 22 years. I mean, how do they explain it? You know, it'd be too weird. They could do the whole CG thing like they did with Robert De Niro in The Irishman, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I just think that would just take you out of the movie. Because that's what I did with Irishman. For me.
I just don't think it should be touched.
I don't think it ever will. I honestly think this is just going to be one of their movies that doesn't happen, but they talked about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only way. I agree. No, I can't see it happening. I think there's too much to work out. I think the people being in the movie, I don't know, just we'd be comparing it too much. I don't know. I think when it's at a level that it's already at, leave it. I'm surprised Ridley Scott is involved.
Story's been told.
I'm surprised Ridley Scott is involved. He's not a sequel person, is he, really?
He's done a lot of sequels. Has he? He's done like three Alien movies, and there's a fourth one on the way.
As a director, he's not done. He probably has.
He did Prometheus. Right, yeah. Yes.
So I'm looking at the wrong screen. Yeah, you know he's done loads.
He did Hannibal. Hannibal's a sequel.
Hannibal is a sequel. Yeah, you're right. I'm thinking of like his sequels, though, is what I'm thinking of. Because
he did Prometheus and Alien Covenant.
Yeah, rare though. Like he didn't do Aliens.
No, he didn't.
He didn't do Aliens. Like, he was involved in like the production. I'm talking like that. Like he didn't. And he did G.I. Jane. Did he do G.I. Jane 2? Yeah. Was there even a G.I. Jane 2?
Don't go down that road. Don't go down that road.
Okay, he's never done a sequel for one of his movies of the past now. Do you know what I mean?
Of the past now?
He's never really revisited an old movie and like been like, right, we'll bring Alien. It back. Alien's different because it had back-to-back. The sequels were coming. After the first one. I'm talking about like Gladiator was in 2000, 22 years ago. 22 years later, does he really want to be involved in the movie again?
He made Alien in 1979 and then he did Prometheus in 2012. That's a longer period.
I don't see that as like a fucking much of a sequel though. Do you really see that as a sequel?
It's a prequel actually.
But do you really see it that way? I don't.
But it is. It is a fish. And then Alien Covenant. Is a sequel.
Yeah, but no one's seen that.
Prometheus.
No one's watched that movie.
You've lost your argument. He's never made a
no
sequel.
No one's seen Alien Covenant. Have you seen that? I don't believe you. No one's seen
I've
it.
I've seen it, but it was, I can't really remember anything about it. I just remember one of the xenomorphs killed a woman in the shower. That's the only bit I remember.
Of course, that's the bit you remember.
Because it's like a horror movie. Yeah. That was like a slasher film. That was the most slasher film he ever made.
And it was Alien. Yeah. All right. Covenant. All right. All right. All right. All right. I just don't see him touching it. Anyway, we're spending too long talking about Gladiator. Gladiator's a great movie. That's why I put it at number two.
Cool. And we have to go to your number four.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. My number four is The Martian. Did it make your top five?
Okay. It was number two for me, The Martian.
Oh, well, let's get into it. The Martian. Why is it your number two? That's high. That's higher than I expected from you.
I saw it in the cinema and I thought it was all right. But as I've watched it over time on Netflix, it's normally on Netflix, I've really got into this movie. Mm. I really think it's just a great movie. I honestly think it's one of the best movies he's ever made. I think it's funny. I think it's got such a good pace to it. I like all the actors, all the supporting cast that are involved in it. I think it's a wonderful story. I just find it absolutely riveting.
It's a surprisingly good film, isn't it? Because the kind of the idea of it, you're like, oh, sounds a bit boring. But it is a really good film. It's a really good film. And the pacing of the movie is great. Damon in it is great. Yeah, it's one that, like, initially, if you describe it to someone, I don't know if they'd initially jump on it and be like, yeah, I really want to see that movie. I think it's one you see and you're like, oh, that actually was, that was quite good.
It's also massive in scope.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much going on. There's so many things. It's like Black Hawk Down in a way that it's always consistently moving. You're not always watching Matt Damon stuck on a planet. Mm. You're watching the ship and his crew that left him behind contemplating if they're going to go back. Then you got everyone on the ground at NASA trying to figure out. This is, for me, this felt to me like scientists trying to solve a problem. Like, it felt like the most...
Smart movie.
It felt like the most scientific... I don't know how much of this hard science is accurate. I can imagine it's probably about 90%, 95%, because they would have consulted with people to make sure it was as authentic as they possibly could, with a little bit of poetic licensing. It just really surprised me. The first time it had so much hype, and when I watched it, I didn't really get the hype, but the more I've seen it over the years, it just is a movie that I love to revisit.
Well, it's one, going back to the accuracy thing, they had James L. Green, the director of a planetary science division at NASA's science mission Dictoriate, worked as an advisor for the film. So he really did want the accuracy to be there. And they say it is reasonably realistic, which I think reasonably realistic for a science movie is a pretty good compliment, because I don't think they can say that about too many movies. Too many sci-fi movies anyway. So, but I think with the story of this, it kind of needed to be a bit realistic as well, didn't it? Because it is less about the glitz and glamour and more about, like, the personal struggle and you know, a little bit more of a low-key kind of problem. But, some of the things that happened in the movie weren't entirely realistic, like the dust storm reaching 120 miles per hour apparently would, in reality, wouldn't be that strong as the movie depicted it to be. But, yeah, I think drafting in someone who has experience within NASA to get us to make it accurate, I think it's a very... is very good. I mean, do you know what movie, you know, maybe we reviewed not long ago, was it Red Planet?
Yes.
It wasn't Red Planet, it was the other one. What was the other one? Mission to Mars.
We did both of them that you did. Mission to Mars. I did Red Planet.
That's the one I was thinking of. So Mission to Mars was quite an accurate movie, and it actually got compliments for being quite accurate with some of its stuff. And it also had elements of The Martian, with Don Cheadle's character being stuck there. I think that The Martian was inspired by Mission to Mars.
At this time, you got to think, 2013, we had Gravity, where Sandra Bullock is stranded in space. We had...
Did I like that movie? I don't know if I liked that
movie. Where Matt Damon was stranded on a planet, and then we've got The Martian, where Matt Damon is stranded on Mars. So we had a lot of sci-fi stranded movies. And it's weird how I actually think The Martian might be the best of those three.
Yeah, I think so. Do you know, Gravity was one that when I first watched it, I liked it. Second time viewing, not as good.
Yeah, I don't go back to it as it doesn't wow me as much. No,
but it was,
it's quite basic compared to the others.
It is a bit basic, isn't it? But it was still really good movie. But yeah,
it's still a good movie. Yeah, it's just not a masterpiece is what we're saying.
Didn't blow me away the second time. But yeah, I think Martian's a good choice. For surprise, it's high on your list. But yeah, number 4 for me.
I said it really did surprise me.
Surprised me too. That's why it made the list, I'd say. Your number 3.
I have a feeling our number 3s are the same.
Go on, then.
If we're just going through what everything's been, I think we're gonna. This might be the first top 5 where we actually have the same 5. My number 3 is Blade Runner.
Yeah. So that means we'll get to our number 1, but I imagine our number 1 is the same.
Yeah.
But Blade Runner is number 3 for me as well.
And now, maybe a lot of people, Blade Runner being number two. And the reason Blade Runner for me is in the middle and not second up or number one is because I respect it a lot more than I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love this movie, but I respect so much about it. And I do constantly think about it and revisit it. And there's moments that I really like. I really like, you know, its themes and the way it tackles itself. But I also, I don't love it, but I know, I recognize great work when I see it.
I'm surprised. I thought you did love this movie.
I don't love it. There are bits that I love about it. I mean, I love the Rutger Hauer final monologue scene. Mm. I think that's brilliant. I like, I like most of the Rutger Hauer bits anyway. I like a lot of the themes, and I like how it looks aesthetically. But I don't love it. I think it's the same with the sequel as well. I like a lot of it, but I don't love it.
All right, fair. No, I did actually love this movie. I think this movie is better the more you watch it as well. I mean, this is a... It feels kind of... Would you say it's a cult kind of favourite now? There's a big cult following, I'd say, for this movie now.
Yeah.
And it...
This movie obviously came out. It was critically panned.
Yeah.
This is one that Ridley Scott has probably spent the most time editing to make his best version of it. There have been so many re-edits of Blade Runner. I think he's edited it for the last time now. I think it's the final cut. He won't touch it anymore. But he obviously, this is the story that he's obviously loved the most or been disappointed the most of the reaction or whatever, that he has tried to claw it back and reclaim it.
Yeah, he's done a pretty good job at that, I'd say, because... I mean, nowadays it kind of holds the status of being a classic movie, doesn't it? And there aren't too many people who don't like it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people say it's like the best sci-fi movie ever made.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. And yeah, and a lot of people would probably say it's their favourite movie that he's ever made as well. So,
which is a fair shout, I would say.
I think it's a fair shout. I think a lot of these movies in our top five are interchangeable and it wouldn't cause too much controversy. The heat's getting to me.
Controversy.
The heat's getting... Controversy.
Controversy.
Doesn't matter. Whatever is whatever. Tomato, tomato. Yeah, Blade Runner is a good movie. I haven't seen the new Blade Runner, though. The 2049 one. Haven't seen that.
I saw it. The first time I saw it in 4DX. And I got bored of... I would never watch a movie in 4DX.
Is that where they splash you with like water and spray?
Yeah, and they rock you back and forth. About 3 hours of that is too much. Like, maybe like... Gravity's like an hour and a half. An hour and a half you could deal with. Like, 3 hours of being rocked back and forth. The only reason I thought it'd be good is because I was imagining Blade Runner's all foggy. And I know they got a fog thing. So I was imagining like it was going to be foggy and it was going to like... When they were flying, you were going to rock it back and forth. I just thought like they tried to do it too much, and it didn't really like work with the movie.
Yeah,
it worked against
the
movie.
I'm surprised you went and saw it in that way, because you're one of the people who said that 3D is just a gimmick, is what you said at the
time.
It has turned out that way to be a gimmick. You were right about that.
Exactly.
4DX, I think.
Do you know why? Because they did it in the 50s and they did it in the 80s. And again,
and they did
it was
in
always
the early
the
noughties
same thing.
As well. I remember watching Spy Kids 3D.
I remember watching that, yeah.
So there you go, they did it again.
I remember taking off my glasses to see what I looked like without the 3D, and it looked weird.
Yeah, it was kind of like watching a movie without sight, wasn't it? Everything's kind of blurry and out of shape. But
yeah, in like different colours. Greens and purple.
I've never seen a movie in 4DX. I almost want to now. Because I just think it's stupid. It's so stupid I want to do it.
It's like the world's worst roller coaster. The worst bit is there's this like little thing which like pushes like when there's a... Mainly they do it on fight scene, but there's like this thing on like the back of the seat which like sort of like punches you in the back.
What?
It feels like someone's kicking your seat. That's what it feels like. It feels like someone's kicking your seat.
You turn around and just put, hey, bro.
And just punch someone out. You've done it for 3 hours now, you bastard. And you spitting in my face in the front.
I told you to stop. It says scent as well. Scent. Did you get scent?
No, I don't remember.
Water, wind, scent, and strobe lighting. That thrill.
I remember the strobe lighting.
Wait, so when you're in the seat, do you move with everything, or do you just move when it's relevant? Do you have like sudden sharp movements, or is it always constantly kind of like left and right, back and forth?
For me, relevant is when they're in the spaceship and they're flying, but sometimes when like he found out stuff, like when he found out clues, suddenly you'd be swaying back and forth. I didn't really understand that.
Well, he's standing still.
I just thought like it didn't work with the narrative of the story.
Yeah, they forced that one, I think.
Yeah.
That's funny though. Being sprayed with water. Even though, because
the only one I might do
Avatar.
Is maybe if they did Avatar. Avatar, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Was there many people watching it in 4DX when you went there? I can imagine that cinema's always empty.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of people.
Yeah, I can't imagine many people choosing that as a way to watch a movie.
But they always promote it, don't they? Like Cineworld, they always promote 4DX. They really push it down. And because they promote it so much, tells me that people are not actually using it that much.
Yeah, that's almost certain. I think it works more for kids' movies. If you're a kid, like, it makes sense to go watch a crappy kids' movie and then be thrown around. And they enjoy the gimmick of that. But when you're an adult, it's kind of a bit silly, and you're being left and right. Oh, Jesus Christ, I can't see.
you couldn't watch something like The Lost Daughter in 4DX.
No, you couldn't. You really couldn't. No, you couldn't. It would have to be an action movie where a lot's going on. My issue with 3D was that they seem to make films for 3D, so the certain scenes would be in there that are only they only work in 3D.
They used to, Channel 4 did this thing years ago where they had a 3D weekend, and you got the 3D glasses, and they had like that night on a couple of days of that weekend where they would show a movie. And you'd wear the glasses. Now, the best one was Friday the 13th, part 3D. And again, but it's not like, remember Avatar or Gravity, where it felt like you were immersed into the 3D. Mm. This one's just like sticking things in the face. So there was a guy with a yo-yo. And like it would pan down, so he's like doing the yo-yo into the camera, and you just see the yo-yo come out of the screen. Or when Jason's got a pitchfork and it sort of goes into the out of the screen, it was stuff like just that. Stupid. But it's never as great as. Do you remember the adverts they had in 3D where like you would see like something come out of the screen and everyone would
like
duck.
A dinosaur.
When has that ever been like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, like
when has 3D ever been like that?
Well, like a big dinosaur head comes out and it's kind of like over the seats.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. 3D is shite. I would prefer to watch a movie in a normal way every single time.
Yeah. It's not as great.
It's crap.
And it's way too expensive for a gimmick.
Absolutely. 4DX sounds... I mean, it's 4DX extreme cinema. I don't like the way they've advertised that either. Extreme cinema?
The way they make it, like the adverts, they make it sound like you're in the movie.
Yeah.
You're not in the movie. It took me out of the movie, actually.
Because I just...
because I'm like, what's next going to happen to this chair? Like, you just anticipate what's going to happen to the chair, and then you get sprayed. There's nothing like... Just do this, right? Just say to someone when you're watching TV, every 5 minutes, squirt my face with water.
And bubble the seat.
And wobble the seat.
And fart.
And then flick the lights up and down. Like,
and start blowing in your ear.
Who watches a movie like that? Yeah. who watches a movie like that?
Yeah, no, you don't. You want to watch a movie in like complete bliss, no interruptions. Yeah, yeah. We moan about people in cinemas, like talking and whispering and like getting up to go to the toilet. And everything that happens in the cinema is a distraction. Someone would like, you'd be in a cinema full of like, 60 people, and one person would get their phone out to check a text, and immediately you're just like, what's that? And you immediately you look to the light that's just appeared, you're like, what's that? It takes you out of the experience. It's the same as like someone goes to the toilet. Annoyingly, I'll watch them walk out the cinema. Like, why am I watching that person leave? Because they're so distracting.
I suppose the only thing is it'd probably be hard to leave a rocking 4DX chair.
Yeah, I don't...
That would be more distracting if someone's like wobbling down because they've lost their equilibrium because they've been rocked back and forth to go to the toilet.
I hate leaving the cinema to go to the toilet. So I will hold on as much as I can. I think
you do it before.
One time...
I don't drink or eat when I go to cinema. I don't understand this fascination with eating and drinking when I go to the cinema.
Do you know what? It's probably maybe because... It's when I don't go for a while. When I go, like, if I'm, like, seeing movies consistently, then I won't. If I haven't been for, like, 3 or 4 months, then I'll go and I'll be like, I'm going to make this an experience. Like, I'll get the popcorn, I'll get a drink. They kind of make a thing out of it. But then, yeah, I suppose if you go a bit more frequently, then you're like, nah, just fucking go watch the movie and leave. I'm here to watch the movie. I'm here for business. I'm here to watch the movie.
Is that, eat afterwards. I always think eat afterwards because then you can talk about the movie yourself.
True. Very true. Very true. Popcorn's not a food, though, is it? Popcorn's just like... Oh, I had popcorn in Batman. I always get self-conscious, though.
I had popcorn in Batman,
I have to eat popcorn during the loud scenes, because I'm like, I don't want to be eating popcorn while it's kind of quiet.
I'm the same.
So as soon as the loud scene, because like...
And if you eat popcorn, you have to have a drink, because popcorn's way too dry. Start getting like corn in your teeth or down your throat, and then you need to like clear it. Like, that's... Well, you got the drink.
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay. So, going to the cinema to watch big movie releases. Batman.
Has been around with Batman. Something that's a quieter movie, though. The way the wind blows, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it has to be a loud movie. Top Gun would probably be a good popcorn movie, actually, which I still haven't seen.
It would, actually. I saw it, and I loved it, so I told you. But yes, that would be a good popcorn movie.
Anyway, Ridley Scott, let's get to one.
That might be a good movie to watch with 4DX as well, actually.
Top Gun.
If they do it right.
Yeah.
The aviation
scenes would make sense. Yeah, makes sense. Anyway, back to Ridley Scott. Number one. What's your number one? I imagine it's the same as mine.
It's got to be Alien.
Same. So this is a podcast first. We have the same top five, but in different order.
In different orders, but the same number one, same maybe, number one, yeah. First time,
yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
Probably.
Maybe. Sometimes I think with like movies, I fluctuate of what I think's the best one or whatnot. I think at the moment, Alien is the best Alien movie. It used to be Aliens for a long time, but I think Alien...
Really?
Actually... pips it a bit, yeah.
I know, I always thought that. I never thought that Aliens was better than Alien. I always leaned towards
Alien. I went through a big James Cameron phase, though. Like, James Cameron, like, everything he made was, like, the best thing ever for me. And going back to Alien, I just really like it. I also... It's one of the few movies, and I can't think of any other movie, where I forget that Xenomorph is a man in the suit. I am still, this is movie magic for me. I still do not know how they make the Xenomorph look so goddamn scary and so realistic. Because it doesn't look, it looks like it's there. Doesn't look like a person in a suit. Doesn't look like CGI. Some of them in later time did. But it really looks gruesome. It might be the best alien design ever.
I think. It is. Because I think with alien movies, there is a battle between making an alien typical looking or going a little bit too overboard with it. And I think this one hits it right there because it kind of looks like a giant bug, doesn't it, in a way? And yeah. I think that's actually a good... Because it's definitely scary. And I think that's a good medium with that alien. That's definitely, for me, the most memorable looking alien I've ever seen as well.
Yeah, this is and everything about, I mean, the acid saliva, yeah, is such a good little thing of it. This is and a lot of people said, and I agree, this is a slasher movie in space.
Yeah, it is.
This is like what if Mike Myers was an alien? Like this alien is picking off people in a house, and which is a spaceship. I like the cast. I like how slow it is. I like how unprepared you are for it, for what you're going to see. I mean, obviously, most famously, the chest bursting scene with John Hurt, where Ridley Scott did not tell the actors what was going to happen, just to get a real reaction. Really works. It really stands out. Obviously, Sigourney Weaver's Ridley is such an iconic character. And it's just great. And I didn't realize until I watched Prometheus, the engineers at the start. So it had the engineers. It had these aliens that had been killed by the xenomorphs at the start of that movie. And so it's got this like pretext of something that's already happened here that nobody knows. It's a mystery which they had to wait 40 years later to kind of get to. And I kind of like that kind of movie that this did this. It feels like it didn't need to be a film franchise, but the fact that they've made it a film franchise is brilliant. It could have just been a standalone film, couldn't it, really?
Yeah, easily could have been a standalone film. I think it was almost too successful, and there's kind of a lot to explore that it's better that it wasn't a standalone film.
Yeah, yes and no. I always think that they maybe... It's so basic, Alien, that the sequels and the spin-offs and all that are overcomplicated sometimes.
Mm.
Like Alien versus Predator, which we talked about last week, didn't we? I put it on my top five.
Yeah, he did.
You know, the whole stupid story about that. And I think there's so much to explore, but also how simple and basic it is, it didn't have to be explored.
True. But it is one where you are kind of looking for more. You're thirsty for more content.
Because you love that movie. Yeah. You love that movie. And I watch this movie a lot of times, Alien. If it's on, if I feel like I want to watch Alien, I watch Alien. So it's one that I consistently go back to.
Yeah, it's definitely got rewatchability. And I think that is something that Ridley Scott actually is very good at in general, is a lot of his movies have rewatchability to them. Don't they? They are.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he's up there in terms of like he's like Spielberg, like Spielberg's. I don't know.
He I would say he's like the adult version of Spielberg. Yeah. Spielberg's more into like that sort of movie magic, like it feels like that beauty of like. Look at the world we're kind of making, kind of like a kid's eye of stuff. Yeah. Whereas Ridley Scott, it feels a lot more run down. It feels a lot more colder, yeah. A lot more bleaker.
He's Spielberg's edgy cousin, isn't he? He's like his edgy cousin.
Yeah, he's the edgy Spielberg in a way.
He's for the cool. I mean, the people who like to think they're cool, who are like, I do love Spielberg. Like fuck Spielberg, man. He's part of the fucking industry, man. He's industry puppet, man. And then they're like, I love Ridley Scott. They're like that. It's for those people. But you can love both, obviously. Yeah, he is that edgy cousin. He's got a bit of something to him, a bit of grit to him. He's not afraid to go places where he's like, you know, they'll be like, that movie could have been a 12 or a PG, and we could have put that out and made a lot more money. But then he's like, "Now we're sticking an RPG through someone's chest and blowing the shit out of everyone." Like, okay, well, it's an 18 then. I don't care. He's kind of like that, isn't he?
Good.
Or Spielberg would be like, "How do we make? We can tone this down a little bit, and we can make as much money as humanly possible." I think he cares less about the money. I'm not saying Spielberg cares about money, but I would say
I think Ridley cares about money, but I also think
it's true to him.
He cares about it has to feel like I think everything he does with a sense of that was the best creative decision I had.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's the way. That's why he's been so successful.
And so consistent. I mean, there are periods in his career where he was making movies that went completely under the radar, but he just kept churning away. And now, like, his name is synonymous with the great directors that are around.
He has a great name. Ridley Scott.
And he had a great brother as well. I mean, his brother, Tony Scott, another great action director, who obviously made the first Top Gun. And he was obviously... that's a good like brother duo. I mean, like, how many good, apart from the Coen brothers, like separate brother duos are out there like making great successful movies?
That's a good point, yeah. And in terms of consistency as well, like, you know, you got like Top Gun in 86 and then Man on Fire in 2004, Enemy of the State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. True Romance, the A-Team. Is that was his last movie, Unstoppable? Didn't see that movie.
Which I really liked. I really liked Unstoppable.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, they're a good duo. They're actually a really good duo. Rare that you can produce... One family can produce two big-time directors like that. It's impressive. It's very impressive. Yeah. Yeah, that's our Ridley Scott loving, I think, over.
Yeah. Ridley Scott, we love.
There you go. Let's get on to what we watch next week. Next week, I've decided to pick a relatively new movie. You may have to reach into your pocket for this one because it's on Sky Store. I don't know where it's available anywhere else. It's from the director, the elusive director, Sean Baker. It's Red Rocket. It came out last year, starring Simon Fox. We're very familiar with Mr. Sean Baker, the mm-hmm. director of Tangerine, The Florida Project. He does things a little bit differently, and what I like about his movies is his inclusion of people that aren't really actors in movies. He has a lot of unknowns, doesn't he, in his movies. He's not afraid to put an unknown in a big role, and yeah, he's just an interesting director. And I thought the story to this movie, I mean, he likes a lot of character movies, doesn't he? He's very around what the character, building the story around the character rather than what the character has to do in order to get to A to B. So I thought it'd be an interesting one. I've heard a lot about Red Rocket. I've heard a lot about Simon Rex's performance as well. So I think this would be an interesting
one. I've heard a lot. I mean, I'm curious. I've wanted to see this movie, so it gives me a good excuse to watch it.
An A24 movie as well. We know how much I like A24. Distribute mm-hmm. some of
they've
the best.
They will
distribute some good stuff. And this was a Cannes movie as well. Yeah, I'm very intrigued about this movie. And what I like about it as well is if you go through the casting credits, a lot of people, there are so many unknowns in this movie. Like they're like Wikipedia, they haven't even got a page. That's how unknown some of these people are. So I think this will be quite interesting. Shall I explain what it's about? I haven't actually explained what the movie's about.
Explain it. Yeah, I know what it's about, but you should probably explain it to them.
All right,
yeah.
So brief description. Mikey Saber is a charismatic con man and a washed-up porn star. He plots his return to the big time from small-town Texas in the story of an American hustler and a hometown that barely tolerates it. So basically, he returns to his hometown, and he's looking for a way to get back to L.A. and be the big porn star that he believes he is. That's the story.
It's like a phoenix rising from its ashes.
Sounds very Sean Baker-esque, doesn't it? So it should be quite good. And we'll watch that next week. Any final words before we die in the heat tomorrow? This could be our last podcast.
it was good while it lasted.
We had a good run. We almost got to 72? We almost got to 100. We almost got there. We're very close. All right. Adios.
Goodbye.